Hi, I'm Doug Keck, and welcome to The Catholic Sphere. You know, each week we bring you a distinguished panel of theologians and experts to discuss topics that are important to Catholics around the globe. Today we'll be talking about surveying the priesthood in the United States, the ups and the downs of a wonderful life of a priest. Joining me for this discussion, we have prolific author, host of EW10's Open Line Tuesday, and member of the Fathers of Mercy, Father Wade Meneses, very popular here on the network. He is with us today from Kentucky. We have a host of EW10 Radio's Beacon of Truth, also known as the Dynamic Deacon. Deacon Harold Burke Sivers, longtime friend of the network, joins us from Oregon. And finally, EW10's Vice President of Theology, Colin Donovan. As always, he joins us from our theology studio. Welcome, gentlemen, to the Catholic Sphere and spending the time to join us to talk about this very interesting survey. So, Colin, we'll start with you. Survey says it's a wonderful life, but there's some difficulties there, especially in talking about parish life, which was a great focus of this. So why don't you talk a little bit about an overview of what we gathered from this survey, and then we can talk specifics with our panel.
Sure. Well, very quickly, what the survey is, it comes from the Catholic Project at the Catholic University of America. And they've done this before. In fact, they had done it in 2022. And this was sort of a follow-up in 2025 to see how things have changed. And they did a number of measurements, the flourishing of the priest in his own assessment of his own life, but also the life of his particular organization. So this was both diocesan clergy, so their diocese, and also religious priests, so it was their religious communities as well. And they asked them also particular questions regarding, say, the correspondence of their views with their bishop or religious superior on different different areas, like theologically and politically and so on. But I think the most important aspect of the survey has been that it did show a high degree of individual flourishing among diocesan religious clergy. About 82% sort of felt that things weren't going all that badly and they were flourishing. A little more prosaic view of the of their organizations, diocesan priests 57%, religious priests 62%. So it does point out a number of issues, at least as perceived by the clergy that were interviewed. And it makes an interesting look at the priesthood and how priests are doing. And they seem to be doing, you know, as the, our title of our program suggests, having a wonderful life. But there are ups and downs, and the survey was something of a measurement of those ups and downs.
Right. Actually, it depends on, you can be in Bedford Falls or Pottersville, depending upon maybe what particular parish or diocese you might be in. Father Wade, as the priest here on the panel, not to put pressure on you, when you read the survey, what was your major takeaway?
You know, I thought, Doug, first of all, thank you for having me on today on the Catholic Sphere. It's great to be with all of you. I thought that overall, it gave a very optimistic picture of the priesthood here in the United States. There are a few areas, like loneliness, for example, a little bit of burnout, that were contributors to some of the negative aspects of what showed up on the survey. But for the most part, I thought it was very good, and it showed a positive overview. And I like the title of this particular episode. It is a wonderful life. I can vouch for that. And I like the fact, too, that it covered both diocesan priesthood and religious order priesthood, but specifically those in both of those categories that are in parish life, that are stationed at parishes and involved with parishes. And even for religious who are involved with parish life, they still have a relationship not only with their own superior general, but with the bishop of the diocese as well. So it showed some good points, some good figures, I think, of things that are going on positively in the United States here regarding the priesthood.
Now, you pointed out right at the top about loneliness. Why is that a factor? Yeah. Is it a bigger factor today than it was in the past? If so, why, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think so. And I made a few points on that particular topic while going through the survey pretty extensively. So first of all, you know, I really believe this. I think the scandals the Priestley scandals have made priests a little more reticent to make close friends with those who are not priests. That is, they are cautious of not wanting to be accused of having particular friendships. And so I think that that could be a contributing factor. It's by no means the only factor. The burnout factor that I mentioned briefly, you know, not only physical, but also mental and emotional. Those categories came up within the survey, I believe also contributes to the loneliness factor. Younger priests are expected to do more today and at an earlier interval than their senior predecessors were called to do. So, for example, many younger priests today are made pastors by their fifth year when before and up until and just after the Second Vatican Council, because there were more priests, some were not named pastors until their 10th to 15th year. Well, the younger priests today are called to be pastors, and they're made pastors by their bishops earlier on. So there's more responsibilities leading to the burnout, if you will. And so I think these are areas that contribute to that burnout, whether it be more mental or emotional or just physical.
Let me follow up on that with you, Deacon Harold. In your experience, obviously, as a deacon, you work closely with those in the priesthood. You travel a lot. You probably spend a lot of time at a lot of parishes virtually around the globe. Why do you think there's so much burnout? What do you see that leads to burnout, in your own opinion?
Well, again, thank you for having me on the program today. And you're correct. I'm in a different parish almost every week of the year somewhere in the world. And I'm so blessed to be able to spend time in the rectory living with the priest for those days that I'm there. And I can tell you, I have a greater appreciation of the gift of the priesthood, having shared living experiences with them and having great conversations with them. And I can tell you some of the things that, again, anecdotally, that I've experienced talking with the priests and living with them about the burnout. First of all, there's a number of dioceses, particularly in the United States, that are consolidating, that are clustering, where you have, you know, five parishes become one parish, and they have all these wonderful names, you know, together as one or one in Christ, or, you know, talking about these mergers that are happening. And I can tell you, in every single diocese that I've been in, when I'm living with priests or in that situation, they are not happy. Mm-hmm. None of them. They understand, you know, the need, you know, for this happening, but they're not happy about it. I also see a lot of priests who have pets, often dogs or cats, to help combat some of that loneliness factor. You know, because of with these shrinking parishes, they have to drive longer distances to meet the needs of these parishioners in these other parishes. And so there's the loneliness factor plays into that as well, and stress, you know, and talking with a lot of priests again, they don't have training in finance or managing people or human resources or budgeting, you know, that they went to the seminary to serve the people of God as priests. And so now they have to learn all these other skills because they're managers basically of multi-million dollar facilities and building projects. You know, and so that takes away, in some aspects, takes away from what they were actually called and ordained by God to do, which is to administer the sacraments and serve the people of God. So I think some of those are factors that may contribute to it as well.
Let me ask you, going back to you on that, Father Wade, and talking about the priesthood, the idea that it used to be, I know when I was growing up, there was probably, even in a small parish, a couple of priests. You had the pastor and two curates, so to speak, associate pastors.
Sure.
And so you would have a sense, I guess, of community there, something I think the Mercy Fathers try to have for their priests, which seems to work quite well. What about that fact that because there's so many solo priests, it adds so much to that loneliness?
It does. It does. And, you know, you look at the older rectories that were built in yesteryear, and you can tell by the number of bedrooms that there are just how many priests were stationed there, even if it was a diocesan parish and not a religious order parish that's ran by a religious order. So that's always interesting to take note of. And I do believe, too, that there's an isolation factor even in geographical locations. say, Alaska or, you know, Wyoming, where, you know, one parish covers a very, very large geographical boundary. Mm-hmm. And the priest is there in that particular area by himself. And the fact that this workload, again, running this multi-million dollar facility along with building projects and whatnot, and I think that if they're not adequately trained, as Deacon Harold said, mm-hmm. It can add to a stress level that wasn't there prior when they were an associate pastor. Mm-hmm. And so that contributes to the loneliness factor as well. And just because of this overall workload, it prevents priests, I think, from seeking out legitimate and virtuous recreation and leisure. Right. We all have hobbies we like, and those hobbies help us keep an equilibrium when it comes mm-hmm. to the prayer, the work, and the recreation that we're called to live, according to St. Thomas Aquinas, to live a balanced right. life. And this, regardless of what one's vocation is, you know, and I echo what Deacon Harold said, too, about he's an itinerant missionary preacher, just like I am. And even though I'm a religious order priest with the Fathers of Mercy and I'm not stationed at a parish, I spend a good percentage of my priesthood in parishes for an entire week at a time. We usually arrive on the Friday, preach the five-night parish mission, and then leave on the following Friday. So we do have a lot of conversations with the men that are stationed there, whether it's the pastor by himself or a pastor mm-hmm. with an associate. And so we do get to hear their stories and what is contributing to the so-called loneliness factor mm-hmm. and the workload.
Right. So, Colin, let me ask you in some ways as a layperson going to a local parish, you know, sometimes parishes are deemed, you know, alive and successful because of the multiplicity of ministries that they have. But as good as those things can be, it sometimes it makes you wonder, you know, how much attention the local pastor gets pulled into all of these diverse groups rather than necessarily just focusing on his primary mission. Or maybe that is his primary mm-hmm. mission.
Well, there's certainly elements of that to oversee what is happening in your diocese as regard to the different apostolates and the different catechetical works that are being done and so on. But I think one of the difficulties is, and, you know, as the parent of a child with developmental disorders, he had to go through several surgeries. He has continuing disorders. We were interested to find at one of the places we were taking him that they asked us, would you like to be in with a group of people who have just had their child diagnosed to speak of them, because the medical profession is finding that those who have to do long-term care of problematic children or care of their elderly adults, for example, with Alzheimer's, dementia, or whatever, they have many of the symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder, which we normally associate only with soldiers returning from the war. Now, that's a particular kind, obviously, with the horrific things they see. But I think the point is the same, that humanly, we're all built alike. And so it's unsurprising that men who have had so much responsibility placed upon their shoulders, who not only are experiencing their own hurts and wants, their ups and their downs, if you will, mm-hmm. but also are vicariously experiencing that of many hundreds of other people, that this would produce a tremendous amount of stress, as well as giving great opportunities for the flourishing that the survey talked about as well, mm-hmm. sharing in people's lives, in the joys of births and even of holy deaths and so on. But at the same time, the inherent nature of that kind of work, such as in the caring professions during COVID, the inherent nature of that brings with it a lot of stress. So I think as a layperson, I take away among the things is how much more we have to be available to help the priests mm-hmm. And to serve some role in helping them flourish. And maybe as lay people, we like to complain a lot the way things are done in parishes, maybe to back off on that a little bit and try to have a little understanding of what the weight of the cross that the Lord has placed on their shoulders as clergy truly is.
Good point. Deacon Harold, let me ask you, when looking at the survey and reviewing it, you made some notes on particular areas where the pastoral priorities for the church and what the, let's say, the priest saw as important, like youth and young adult ministry, et cetera, family formation, et cetera, up at the top, and evangelization. One of the things that struck me as Father was talking about the consolidation, and you were talking about the consolidation of parishes, sometimes you wonder, where did all the Catholics go?
Yeah, so these consolidation of parishes are happening, I think, for a couple of reasons. One, you know, back in the day, there were more cultural churches. You had the Italian church and the Irish church and the German church. And so they had their own parishes to serve their own specific communities. But now, obviously, that's not the case anymore. So a lot of these parishes are consolidating. We also have Catholics who, some of who have left the church, but I think, I think that's a smaller a factor. We have also a population of people who are moving much more frequently. For example, in my parish, my little parish in Portland, Oregon, you know, we don't have a vibrant youth group at all. You know, we did back, you know, when I was first ordained and first serving there, but the young people leave, they go off to college and they have their own families, but they don't come back to the particular parish. They move to another part of the state or even move out of the state and they're not coming back to the parishes like they used to, you know, where they kind of see it as their home, you know, and I think that's another factor as well. A lot of parents don't see the parish as kind of like their second home, you know, and so there's a they participate in some activities in the parish, but they don't see really the parish as a place where they can bring their families and really experience the Eucharist in a different way outside of the Holy Sacrifice of the Mass. Mm-hmm. Now, that said, I also noticed that there's a tremendous amount of joy in the priesthood as well, especially the younger priests who are doing Eucharistic adoration every day, who are saying Mass beautifully, and even the outward signs, wearing the cassock, it's just a beautiful sign and witness. I think that the priesthood is beginning to thrive again with these younger priests.
Well, let me ask you, Father Wade, to dovetail off of that, you talked about the, in a sense, looking at the survey and seeing the quote-unquote more traditional Orthodox leanings of younger priests ordained since 2010. Why do you think that's the case, and how is that impacting the church in your own experience?
Great question. So I think there's several areas contributing to this. First of all, those ordained around 2010 and beyond, which is where we see the percentages go up with more traditional-leaning priests, theologically, morally, dogmatically, and liturgically. This is the so-called John Paul II generation of priests. If you stop and think about it, Pope St. John Paul II was elected pope in 78. So 2008 would be 30 years later. And we're seeing these traditional priests in their mid to late 20s, early to mid 30s, being ordained around 2010. So this is per se the JP2 generation. And I credit John Paul II's numerous documents and Pope Benedict XVI as Joseph Cardinal Ratzinger, as the prefect for what was then called the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, now called the Dicastery for the Doctrine of the Faith, but also documents he issued not only then as Cardinal Ratzinger, as head of that congregation, but also documents he issued as Pope Benedict XVI. So these documents were liturgical, especially with Benedict, the spirit of the liturgy in 2000. How about Evangelium Vitae from John Paul II? How about Veritatis Splendor, the splendor of truth, and the gospel of life versus the culture of death? These documents were landmark encyclicals that I think started a shift back to a balanced view of the church's teachings in regards to these various moral and dogmatic areas, how to celebrate the liturgy well, the reverence due to it as the Eucharist being the source and summit of the Christian faith, et cetera. So, you know, the experiments of the sacred liturgy, I call them the experience, quote unquote, which followed the immediate aftermath of Vatican II, and which lasted for the most part about 35 years, were in large part dug over by 2010. And I think because of these numerous written works by JP2 and Benedict, and there were other Catholic authors, lay men and women, who wrote great books as well, I think priests who had these more traditional leanings from a great solid Catholic upbringing were not as bashful now to let their views be known, views that were actually perfectly in line with church teaching, not swerving left, not swerving right to the chair of Peter, but rather just being solidly in line with the chair of Peter. And so these priests started being more courageous, if you will, in letting their views be known morally, dogmatically, liturgically, how to celebrate the liturgy well, as I said earlier. And these points contributed to the traditional uptick, I think, that we saw in the survey.
So what do you say? Somebody, let's say an older priest might say, well, that's fine. We all come out of seminary and everybody's on fire. And then you meet the real world and you deal with the hierarchy and the problems in the parish and you know, your ideals kind of slip away. So this might be a temporary thing.
Yeah, I would disagree with that, because even myself, I just turned 60 myself, and so I'm not part of that younger 2010 group. I was ordained during the Great Jubilee year 2000, mm-hmm. but my views haven't changed. My confreres here in the Fathers of Mercy that are in my age bracket and older, their views haven't changed. We want to be faithful, joyful, committed priests, again, mm-hmm. not left, not right, but just in line with the chair of Peter. And that is where joy is found. You know, again, St. Thomas Aquinas, virtue is found in the mean, right? The via media, not on the isms that go too far one way or the other. And so that joyfulness is found in the via media, and that is the chair of Peter. And so, you know, the things that were promulgated by the more progressives in the church in the immediate aftermath of the Second Vatican Council, a lot of that stuff has gone by the wayside. Yeah, granted, you see pockets here and there of some crazy things still going on at Mass and whatnot. But for the most part, that has gone by the wayside. And I see this in the parishes that I preach at for a full week period, preaching a parish mission. And I also see the conservatism of the people, not only at the weekend Masses, but those who are committed to coming to the 4 or 5 night mission and faithfully come to it each night. They talk too, and they're happy to see this change in the priesthood and becoming more conservative and more traditional. And I want to make it clear, that doesn't mean ultra-right. Mm-hmm. Ultra-right can do just as much damage in the church as the left can, right? Mm-hmm. I'm talking about, when I say conservatism or traditionalism, I mean one, again, that is right in line with the chair of Peter.
Right, exactly. The both-and Catholic approach to these things.
Exactly.
Without excluding anything. Colin, when you were looking at this survey and talking about it, you focused a little bit, as Father did, on the idea of the spirit of Vatican II and some of the decline and some of the uptick you're seeing in a positive way. And do you see that in your own parish and your own experiences when you travel about?
You know, I think as Father has described, less and less. In places I've lived, it's been very pronounced, especially in the 70s and 80s. In the 80s, I was in the seminary for that phase of discernment of my life, which brought me here, but not as a member of the clergy. And so, you know, I've seen pretty much that whole history develop from serving at the Mass of 1962 as an altar boy, to seeing the transition to the Novus Ordo, seeing the abuse of the liturgy in various ways, from altar girls and clown masses, altar girls dancing liturgical dance up the aisle before Mass, and clown masses and things of this nature. Sheer stupidities that surprising that any Catholic would do. You don't hear of those things anymore. I think we've gotten more sense, and the toleration of the laity for it is decidedly less than it was in the 70s. But, you know, a lot of that has to be gotten out of the church. There were two apostolic visitations to seminaries in the United States in the 1980s precisely because of concerns of the Holy See regarding the teaching in seminaries. That too is behind us, and I think for the most part seminaries are in solid shape today. All of these things are working together to contribute to a priesthood which is orthodox and pious in the sense of according to their sacerdotal nature, their priestly nature, and living that by a Eucharistic life, which is the central feature of their nature and of their office. And so I think we've seen that, and I hope that it, if it continues as it is, I think it presages, you know, a very good future to the church in the United States, because that's been largely my experience. But hopefully the same thing is happening in other countries as well.
Right. Deacon Harold, you talked about confidence in leadership in the survey. One of the things that struck me based on what Father Wade was saying, I was thinking how as a Catholic, we, you know, John Paul II and Benedict, there seemed to be this clarity. And I think even as Catholics in the pew, this confidence and understanding exactly what we were supposed to be doing. And I have to say that I think it's fair to say that in the last pontificate before this one, sometimes it was a little more vague sometimes in the way that particular Holy Father spoke about things and made people feel a little more uneasy about understanding exactly what they're to believe. Why do you think you're seeing and are you seeing, as Father Wade was talking about a little bit, not from a right-wing perspective or even a political perspective, but a more, let's say, traditionalistic idea or orthodox in the sense of the belief systems of the core values of the church? Where are you seeing that and where do you think that's coming from?
Yeah, I think Father Meneses absolutely got it correct. You know, we and Colin Donovan as well, we saw after Vatican II, there was like a pendulum. There was a swing toward one side, kind of a left, an arc. And then, you know, the what you want to avoid is, as Father Meneses so beautifully said, you want to avoid this radical way swinging to the right and just kind of just focused on the center. You know, and I think a lot of these young priests who are being ordained today recognize that. And they see the need. People want orthodoxy. Look, I could tell you this for a fact. Everywhere in the world that I go, I talk to young people, thousands of young people every year, and they say the same thing. We want to hear the truth, and we're not hearing it, right? There's a serious disconnect between their faith and their everyday lived experience, and they don't know God's love in their life. They don't know, ever experienced the power of God's love. And that's where the priesthood comes in. Priests are fathers of families, you know? And so you want to look to the father of the family for guidance, for direction, you know, for counsel. And when the more that priests are doing that, when they foster a devotion to Eucharist, Eucharistic adoration, when they say Mass beautifully, when they teach the truth and the goodness and the beauty of the Catholic faith, you know, then you see parishes start to come alive and flourish. Mm-hmm. You know, the emphasis on evangelization, witnessing, introducing people and witnessing to the power of God's love working in their lives. Marriage preparation, you know, preparing couples not to look good for pictures, but to receive a sacrament of the Holy Catholic Church that will last them their entire lives. Family catechesis, where young kids are not just there to learn their sacramental prep, but parents are there with them, you know, so they can go home and have the discussions and live out that sacramental reality in the domestic church. You know, these are the priorities that I think this younger generation of priests are saying, yes, these are important. But you know what? I need help with these other things. So having deacons, for example, who have one foot in the secular, who have professional lives, may be able to assist them with some of the financial and these other things so they can be free, you know, to go out and to really be fathers and minister well to their parish families. And one thing I also want to note is that, you know, the lack of confidence in their bishops, you know, 49% in 2022, but only 52%, you know, trusting their own bishop. And then as a bishop's conference, 27% now as opposed to 22%. I think about that, and as a father, if they serve with my kids, well, they, you know, trust my dad 52% of the time. That's something. So I think the priest may be feeling, Father Wade can correct me on this, but I think sometimes they feel that the bishops are in a sense disconnected from them because they're administrators and not getting their hands dirty day to day in the life of the parish. And so I think bishops need to pay attention to that and really reconnect in a meaningful way with their priests.
Absolutely. Well, that's the end of the program. We are just out of time. Lively discussion. Thank you so much, Father Wade Meneses, Deacon Harold Burke Sivers, and Colin Donovan for being with us today, of course. And we thank you for joining us each week. And don't forget to join us next week for another episode of The Catholic Sphere. I'm Doug Keck. See you then.